Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Oh, hello.
Oh,
welcome
hello.
To Ruined. This is Hallie.
And this is Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for you guys. Hallie, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm so tired. I just... How do people sleep? I feel like I've forgotten it. It's left me. And I'm a good sleeper. Good eater, good sleeper.
Yeah.
Poops very regularly. Yeah. I'm a great baby. And I don't know whether it's the heat and or the state of the world, but it's just tough. I can't sleep at like 6 a.m. I can't do it.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm just up.
I've been doing a lot. I can't think of like the last time I slept through the night where it wasn't like, oh, I drank myself to sleep. Like,
right. Yeah. I took a melatonin.
Yeah. Right. Like when there's
that's
like,
how it's happening.
Yeah. But like otherwise, like I'm up at 3, I'm up at 5, I'm up at 6.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
It
sucks. The drinking might be part of it. I'm going to be honest. I feel like when you drink, it's like heavy sleep, but then bad sleep.
It's not real sleep. Yeah. But like if I have some wine and go to bed, I feel like it's a little better than like the nights where I'm like, all right, do this for real. Do it regular. Just don't drink and go to sleep. And I just can't. I also like have what I think is undiagnosed insomnia. So
go get it diagnosed. What are you doing?
What are they going to do?
I'm sure they got plenty of stuff they could tell you. Little tricks and tips.
Tips and tricks.
We're not a doctor.
Of the sleep
trade. We can't assume we know what a doctor knows. That's the ultimate hubris to say, what are they going to do? We don't know what they're going to say or
tell
you.
I feel like I have to do so much other doctor with my back that I just don't want more doctors. I got the one and
so you're saying you can deal with back stuff and then other than that, you're just going to let it all fall
apart.
I can't argue with that.
Body's falling apart.
Speaking of bodies, we're kicking off our summer camp month.
Yes.
And we're doing a movie that I, myself, Allison, and our producer, Sabrina, were 100% certain we had done before.
Yes.
We've definitely done this movie.
And we haven't.
And the movie was, of course, Friday the 13th. One of the sort of a big heavy hitter of a horror movie.
Yeah. I feel like this is also going to be like one of those movies and one of those episodes where I'm like, oh, I now get way more references and jokes because now I actually know. Like, I know, like, loosely, like,
yes,
if it's referenced, I'm like, I vaguely know, like, what it is or whatever. But I don't really know anything about the movie itself. And it certainly is, like a icon in pop culture that people reference all the time.
Yes, and there are so many moments in it that you're going to recognize from pop culture and from other films sort of both repeating it and referencing it in a more meta way. I just thought a little fun tidbit about it was this is produced and directed by director Sean S. Cunningham and written by Victor Miller. And Cunningham has always been very upfront about the fact that, like, this was just a cold cash grab based on the success of John Carpenter's Halloween. So this
Friday the 13th came out. With Halloween.
Yeah. So Friday the 13th, which we also have not done, which
I know.
Is insane.
It's but, crazy.
So John Carpenter's Halloween came out in 1978. Sean S. Cunningham basically was like, oh, I want to make money. Like, this was this huge blow up, like, you know, obviously small budget film. I want the money. I want the horror money. And so he was, according to Wikipedia, put an advertisement to sell the film in early 1979 before the film was actually written. So it ended up being, you know, a huge box office success when it came out. And sort of, you know, this, again, that's why these are such, like, signposts in cinematic horror, is, like, they were not only something you could do on a budget with, like, right. unknown people, they are absolutely wildly successful. Like, people yeah. will always see these kinds of movies. I would, you know. And this was what an early film for a young Mr. Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
So there, you know, it did birth an absolutely phenomenal career that we're all connected to through Six Degrees or Less, as yes. far as we understand. So we always like to have Allison watch the trailer. And what are your thoughts about the Friday the 13th trailer?
I mean, like, definitely what I was thinking. Like, mm-hmm. it's summer camp. There's cabins. There's bunks. There's, you know, archery. It's like all the stuff that I was like, oh, that's what this is going to be. And that's what this is. And seeing Kevin Bacon was really a delight.
We want to give a shout out to, thank yes. you, Sabrina. Harold emailed in and suggested summer camp month. So shout out to Harold. And this seemed like the perfect way. Like, this is the summer camp horror. Yes. And it's giving you, and it is sure there's something about, and well, maybe I'll take, go that and the, we always like take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of being a camp counselor? Because watching this film, I did have a lot of like, well, there's no locks on the doors. You're out in the middle of the woods, the middle of the night.
I was a camp counselor.
Okay, great.
But
all right.
not regular camp. It was like, I was a camp counselor at the Naval Academy's rowing camp for girls.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, like, while the safety elements of, like, we're in the middle of the woods, like, there's no locks, I'm not a doctor, what if something happened? Like, all that stuff was gone, but the absolute terror of being on a military academy campus and having to, like, corral a bunch of, like, 14 and 15-year-old girls walking around this place that has, like, so many rules was truly horrific.
I would say, honestly, scarier than Friday the 13th.
Yes.
Like, there in the film, I mean, you're only dealing with a very small number of people, fortunately.
Yeah.
Also, I apologize to anyone who's watching the video of this. I just took a shower, so my hair is soaking wet. So I'm sure really adds to the experience.
Soaking wet. You look great.
Thank you. And then beyond that, how do you feel about just sort of the general idea of a killer who's out to indiscriminately kill? You just happen to be at a camp. It's not about you. You are the new hot young thing who is there to be a camp counselor. Well, I guess the question is, like, how scared do you find the concept of you being punished for someone else's crime in the past?
Yeah, that's, like, what's so scary about like this kind of movie is like where it's just like he's angry and killing and it like kind of has nothing to do with you and it's a wrong place, wrong time kind of nightmare, which like of course is what it's like to live in America right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was gonna say, I guess every serial killer, wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's like it's not about like, it's
yeah.
not, you know, an argument with somebody you know that escalated into murder. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, this guy's going to kill someone, and you happen to be the closest someone to him.
This is a morbid question, but do you think it's worse to be indiscriminately killed or to be killed by someone who genuinely hates you and wants to kill you? Which is scarier to you?
I think the likelihood of being indiscriminately killed is much higher than somebody having such a hatred for me that they would murder me. Like, not that I don't think there's plenty of people who don't like me, but none of whom I think are, like, the kind of people who would ever murder someone.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I feel like, I wonder, like, what is the percentage of people who are killed by someone they know? I bet for women it's pretty high.
I think for women it's, like, 100%.
Oh, Lord.
It's not just someone
boy.
You know, it's, like, your partner or something.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Boy, sorry I took us down that road.
Tough
both
road.
Scary. That's the thing is, they're both horrifying they're both, in different ways.
They're both horrific, but, like, I think, like, the randomness of being killed by a stranger for, like, no reason that has to do with you is super frightening because, like, you're never fully safe from that.
Yeah, I feel like that is the American experience at this point, is that we're just, you know, going through the world, hoping to avoid that, being powerless against it. And I guess that's why we watch horror movies, it's like, well, what do I do with all this terror? I'll watch something where at least there's a sort of a narrative resolution to it.
Yes,
and wake up and go through my day and sort of try to make it through. Now, I will say, Allison, and I don't know if you know this about the film, this film does have a pretty classic twist. Like, it has a twist.
Oh.
So would you like to guess the twist of Friday the 13th based on what you know from the trailer and pop culture?
Guess the twist.
I feel like it has to do with a mother.
Okay.
I'm going to guess that it's... This is Jason, right?
This is Jason, yes.
That maybe, like, Jason's mother is doing many of the killings.
Great. Love it.
It's always mom stuff with these psychos.
I know. Which is like, yeah, where's the dad? You know what I mean? Where's that dad?
Where's the dad stuff?
Right. Maybe that would be a female. Yeah, maybe. Well, I guess I was like, yeah, if it was a female serial killer. But I guess they're probably, I would say the only one who comes to mind is Eileen Wardo. So I'm pretty sure there was some unfortunate dad stuff in her past. So.
I've got to believe that there is.
Yeah. All right. So let's begin by ruining Friday the 13th. We open on beautiful Camp Crystal Lake in 1958, where a group of counselors are singing along to an acoustic guitar. They are, of course, all white.
Of course.
And they are singing a song, sort of, as a Christian, as a Jew, I don't didn't really say it like that. As a Jewish person,
yes,
I feel like, are you exposed to, in culture, a lot of Christian songs, like, in a more, like, secular way? Because I feel like hearing all those songs you're singing, I'm like, these are all, like, church songs, but they're being played as if we're all, oh, someone has an acoustic guitar, we're all going to sing
no,
it.
No, I, like, don't think I know. Like, I think I would hear something and be like, I've never heard this before, this isn't a real song, or, like,
right.
It's not, no.
And I was also like, well, I can sing it, but I don't want to get copyrighted. I'm like, copyrighted by whom? Church?
God?
You think they're listening to that? God?
Well, like, who? Like, what are these songs? They're just like...
Here, I'm going to sing a little bit. The river of Jordan is deep and wide. Hallelujah.
They're all just, like, clapping. I've heard that, but, like, in, like, not in my life. Like, I've heard it in, like, in a scene
around
in a movie or something like that. But I haven't, like... ever heard somebody singing that song or that song being played front of me.
And the idea of you sitting around a campfire with somebody strumming an acoustic guitar singing that, I wouldn't want you to have to deal with that.
No, I would become a serial killer.
So two of the counselors, Barry and Claudette, they sneak away to have sex, not knowing there's a figure walking through the woods, sort of following them into a cabin. And this is our classic, sort of our psycho style. We're always, not always, but we're frequently in the killer's POV.
So in the scene or throughout the movie?
Throughout the movie.
Okay.
So, yeah, so we're watching Barry and Claudette go into a cabin. We know that things are going to get spicy. And we are the figure in the shrubbery watching them through the leaves, you know, and then stalking them into the house. And they go into, there's a lot of cabins, and I don't know all of their purposes. This seems to be some sort of storage cabin.
Okay.
So they go up into the attic. So there's a second floor. It's just a bunch of boxes and stuff for the camp. And Barry puts on a blanket, and they go to get busy.
Just have sex outside.
I love how that's your immediate go-to. He's going to kill you outside. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's not even just from a, it's like, I don't know. I would rather have sex, like, in, like, a lush wilderness instead of, like, the attic of a cabin that's got a bunch of moving boxes.
Bugs.
I know.
Sticks.
Bugs are, sticks.
Little animals.
Yeah,
bugs,
you're right.
Again. Wet. I mean,
mud. Wet, yeah.
No, I agree. This is not the most romantic situation.
Yes, but and it's either close.
And wherever you're doing it, please know you're going to be murdered in about 5 minutes. And they sort of, they get to it. And unfortunately, we see the killer is also about to get busy because we see the POV of the killers creeping up the stairs. And when they see the figure, they are not scared. They sort of jump up and they're like embarrassed.
Right.
And Barry's like, oh, sorry, we weren't doing anything. We were just messing around. Unfortunately, Allison, Barry is immediately stabbed in the stomach.
Ooh.
And Claudette shrieks and tries to like scramble behind some of the boxes, but it's too late. She screams as the killer descends on her. We freeze on her howling face. Title card, Friday the 13th.
Ooh.
We return. It is 21 years later, of course. And much like in Christine, and it says Friday, June 13th, the present. The present is 1979,
okay.
You know. But it is the late 70s, and we see Annie, a future counselor, walking through the quaint little town of Crystal Lake. So this is the town that the camp is outside of. And she's headed to her new job, and she's, because it's 1979, she's hitchhiking there. Already terrifying to me.
Yeah, I just like as a like it's crazy how that happened in the like 60s and 70s, and it was like yeah, like, I guess we could just hit, like, there's, like, a Mad Men episode where somebody's like, oh, we'll just hitch. And it's like, what?
And I guess, you know, I'm sure it would be mostly fine. It's just, like, when you're in the situation of, like, well, when it's not fine, it seems like it's just yeah. not, very not fine.
It's like parachuting in that way, where it's, like,
yes.
the, like, if it's fine, it's fine. If it's bad, it's, like, absolutely yeah. a disaster. Like, you die.
So Annie's sort of trying to find directions, and she stops into sort of the locals, like the convenience store, but there's also like a coffee shop. Everyone's like, you know, from the town is like sitting at the bar reading the newspaper. And she says, does anyone know how far it is to Camp Crystal Lake? And they all turn around and stare at her and fall silent. And there's a truck driver named Enos said, well, it's about 20 miles. And another woman who looks fabulous and has like white readers pulls her glasses down and says, Camp Blood? They're opening that place again? Camp Blood.
Camp Blood.
Trudy, or the waitress, asks, like, hey, Enos, would you mind driving her, you know, to the crossroads? So he's like, yeah, I'll drive you, like, most of the way there, and you can walk the rest. And they go to his truck, and again, a classic character in horror movies steps out. His name is Crazy Henry, and he rushes up, and he tells Annie, you're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You're never coming back again. It's got a death curse. And Enos okay. is like, don't listen to Crazy Ralph. He's a real prophet of doom, ain't he? And they get into his truck and drive away. And Annie looks back, a little concerned. And Enos is like, yeah, Crazy Ralph is really not going to help the camp reopening, you know. And he, because he's from Campus Crystal Lake, he says to her, like, I know that the camp is being reopened by a man named Steve Christie. And Steve Christie's family, so his parents, were the original owners of the camp, which has been shut down since 1958. It's been shut down since the murders of those campers, sorry, of those counselors
okay.
at the beginning.
And are we to believe that it's just, not like just two people, but like just two people were killed?
We are going to get into some other stuff that okay. happened, but it was the murders of those two counselors that shut down the camp.
Okay.
And it's understandable if you're sending your kid to a camp. It's like I could send a kid to a camp that's you know, maybe it's a little pricey, and another one where two people were brutally murdered and no one ever solves who did it. So yes. I understand yes. that would be enough to
just shut it down.
Yeah. And Enos asks Annie, has Steve Christie told you anything about that camp? And Annie's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be the camp cook. There's going to be about 50 kids, 10 counselors, mostly kids from the inner city. And Enos is like, no. Did he tell you about what happened? Annie, of course, says no. And he says, quit now. There was a boy who drowned in 1957. A year later, two people were brutally murdered, never solved. And since then, a bunch of fires.
Bunch of fires.
And they said they were going to reopen in 1962, but something happened, and the water was bad. And Annie's like, oh, well, I can't quit now. I mean, you sound like Crazy Henry. And they end up arguing, and Enos is like, you kids today got a head full of rocks. And Annie says, well, at least I'm not afraid of ghosts. But he still drops her off at the crossroads. So she has to walk still probably, I would say, 12 miles. Like, it's still an incredibly long way. But he took her a little way, and she thanks him. Meanwhile, we see three other counselors carpooling there. So we've got Ned, Marcy, and Jack. And Jack is played by Kevin Bacon.
Okay.
And Ned, Marcy and Jack, sort of, you know, their boyfriend, girlfriend, and then Ned's their friend, and he's the most annoying fucking character in a horror movie that we've seen in a long time. Every line of this guy, I'm like, oh, I can't wait till this guy gets killed. I am dying for Ned to get stabbed.
Yeah.
And so he's talking to Marcy, and he's always hitting on Marcy, even though Marcy is, like, clearly Jack's girlfriend and his friend, and Ned's friend, him too. And he's like, Marcy, do you think there'll be any other beautiful women like yourself at Camp Crystal Lake? Mm-hmm. And Marcy's like, oh, Ned, do you ever think about anything but sex? Like, well, luckily, in a minute, he's going to be thinking about getting stabbed to death.
Okay.
So they arrive at Camp Crystal Lake, and they find the owner, Steve Christie, chopping wood. He's shirtless in shorts with a red kerchief. And I'm going to say it, Steve Christie, to me, seems like a guy you'd like, Allison.
Mm.
Blonde, glasses.
I don't love blonde men.
That is insane. I've seen you date so many blonde men. That is the most insane thing you've ever said on this podcast.
I have not dated a lot of blonde men. I dated a blonde guy in college.
I will create a catalog.
Yeah, no, there have been a handful. But in general, it's not my
Okay, I was going to say, if I show you a picture of somebody and you argue that that's, like, technically brown when it's a dirty blonde, I'm going to be very upset.
Okay, fair.
Anywho, unfortunately, it probably won't work out with you and Steve because he's both fictional and, again, about to be brutally murdered in the woods. So they all jump out, and Steve is there with his second-in-command, Alice. and they're 2 weeks till opening. So Steve is at a state, and he's like, we still have to paint everything and fix up a lot of the camp. And, you know, so everyone he sort of assigns to different tasks. So Brenda's already there. She's working to set up the archery area. Bill's painting the lifeguarding chair. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone has to, like, sort of rush around because it's going to be a tough 2 weeks before the campers arrive.
Does this movie all take place in one day?
Yes.
Okay. I was just wondering. I was like, well, we're on Friday the 13th, so I've got to imagine.
Yes, and I do love a horror movie. Like, it's like, yeah, it's over time. Like, okay, we did Christine, and it was like... December 13th.
Right.
It's like, I don't need to know that.
I don't need to know what day it is.
It's over 6 months. This is one day. Yeah.
Okay.
Which, again, so fun. So Steve and Alice go fix a gutter, and Steve is sort of distracted by Alice's sketchpad. And you get the idea that they maybe have been sleeping together, or they did date, and now they're not dating anymore. And he looks, and she has drawn a portrait of him. And he's like, why did you do this? And she said, I did it last night. He said, wow, did I look like that? And she said, you did last night. And okay. It's sort of like Alice is like, you know, she doesn't seem like refurbishing a camp to get murdered in type. She's like an artist, you know.
Yeah.
And Steve is clearly like interested in her, you know, but she tells him, honestly, I don't know how long I'm going to stay here. I mean, you need to go back to California to straighten something out.
Okay.
And Steve says, please just stay the week. And if you still aren't happy, I'll put you on the bus myself. And he sort of touches her face. And I'm like, okay, there's some sort of history
something
here.
Something is happening, yes.
Something, maybe, is it going to work out? We don't know. But there's something there between them. Unfortunately, we see Alice go down to talk to Bill, who's painting, again, the lifeguard chair, to see if he needs more paint thinner. And we see from the killer's POV, they're just hiding behind a tree watching her run. And at this point, everyone is at the camp except Annie. So Annie is still hitchhiking there, but everyone else is all the counselors have arrived except for her. We meet another counselor, Brenda, and she's setting up the archery range. And Steve sort of takes an assessment like, okay, we need paint thinner, we need this. He's like, I'm going to the town for more supplies. I'm going to be gone for like hours. So please, I am begging you, don't screw around. Just do as much as you possibly can. It's supposed to rain later, and I just can't, we can't lose the whole day. So I'm begging you. Mm. And as soon as he drives away, they're like, hey, do you guys know that the townspeople call this Camp Blood? And they all laugh about it, Allison. Oh, they tease each other. Oh, Camp Blood. Can you believe it?
I would not be laughing.
Wouldn't be me. Brenda returns to the archery range, and she puts sort of the targets up, like, I guess, on an easel or whatever you call those. And as she turns around, an arrow shoots into the target, like, inches from her stomach. And she turns around, and it's Ned. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
But Ned sucks, as we've established. So he thinks he's, like, being cool, like, showing off good he is.
No. No, no, no,
it's
no,
like,
no.
You could have disemboweled me. And he even does, like, sort of a Humphrey Bogart impression. He's like, you know, you're beautiful when you're angry, sweetheart. Ned's going to die a virgin. I'm calling it now. This guy's never going to have sex.
I hope he dies a virgin.
Yeah. So finally, Annie is still hitchhiking in the last bit. We see when Steve drives off, he's driving a Jeep, but with the top down. Annie gets picked up, like, the last little stretch by a Jeep with the top on. So I think we're supposed to think, is that potentially Steve? Especially because we do not see the driver. The reason, of course, we don't see the driver is it is the killer. And it will not be revealed to us until later.
Okay.
And so we see Annie kind of gabbing away in the passenger seat, like, I love working with children. It's really been a dream of mine. Allison, the car, whips past the entrance to Camp Crystal Lake. And Annie sees it, and Annie's like, I think that's the road back there. And, of course, ominous music starts to play, and the car starts accelerating, which Annie is, like, begging the driver to please stop. And she does what I think you have to do in that situation is she opens the door, and she fucking jumps out.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, all you can do.
Yeah.
This person, like, whatever is coming for you is going to be worse than that.
Exactly. And she leaves her bag behind, and it's like, that's what you have to do. Unfortunately, when she lands, she hurts her leg. Mm. So the driver screeches to a halt, and Annie's running into the woods as the driver, who, again, we're in their POV, gets out of the car and is stalking her through the forest.
Oh.
And it's generally a scary sequence because, like, Annie is full-on, she's doing it, she's running, but she can't run that fast.
Yeah.
And she's just trying to put space and, like, hide, you know, in the woods, sort of. Unfortunately, she turns to look behind her to see, oh, I think I've lost the driver. When she turns back, the driver is there, and Annie sort of trips. And as she rights herself up against a tree, the killer slashes her throat. So we see the knife, we see the hands, we see, like, a flannel shirt, and she gasps, no, no, as she dies. So Annie is dead.
Annie!
It's a feature rap on death. I know, I assume that she was the protagonist. Like when you see it, you're like, okay, the way we're following
she's
Annie.
Introduced is so main character-y.
Yeah. So back at camp, Steve did ask everyone to keep working. So of course now all the counselors have put on their swimsuits and they're just like laughing and going swimming. They're like, yeah, okay, Steve, you know. And while they're swimming, Brenda is sort of like in the water and she spots something in the trees across the lake. But then she's like, oh, that's probably not. It's probably not anything. And Ned grabs her underwater.
Okay, Ned, and enough.
And she's like shrieking and laughing. He's like, ah, but I'm getting to you. I can feel it. Every time that guy talks.
Annoying.
It's only going to get worse. Speaking of, everyone starts to get ready to go back into camp and actually work, only to realize that Ned's in the water, and they hear him shouting for help, and he disappears in the water. And they all run over, they fish him out, and he appears to be unconscious. So they haul him on the deck, and Marcy does mouth-to-mouth, only for Ned to, like, reach up and grab her and kiss her. It's just a prank, Allison. It's just a fun prank.
Not funny. Also, assault.
Also, that's your friend that you came here. Like, you clearly knew each other outside of the camp, which is, like, that's even weirder. Also, I love a prank where I, for at least a second, think someone has drowned in front of me. You know I'm laughing at that.
Yeah,
okay?
That's hilarious.
Back in her cabin, Alice is getting dressed after the lake and sees a huge snake under her dresser. And she screams, and Bill runs in with a machete. And Bill has a machete to hack down, like, weeds and shrubbery to, like, clear out brush. And so we're establishing we have a machete on the property. And everyone runs in. They're all screaming. Jack, like, jumps on the bed, and the bed breaks, and the snake is under the bed. Everyone's howling. And Bill is finally able to cut the snake in half. And unfortunately, Allison, it was a real snake that they killed during filming, apparently.
Why?
I know, and there's no reason to kill it. It's not like it added anything. It had nothing to do with the larger plot.
Ugh.
I know.
Yuck. Like, I hate snakes, but that's unnecessary.
Yeah, come on. Exactly. Just get it, put it, trap it in one of those laundry baskets and throw it out the door. That's what I would have done.
I mean, I just would have left and gone back to a real place that doesn't have snakes inside.
Right. You would have just walked 20 miles to town.
Yeah. I'd
Absolutely.
Be like, well,
you wouldn't be
for
here.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't be here on a snake.
Find me at the Four Seasons.
So Marcy jokes, like, guess we know what's for dinner. And everyone's like, oh, Marcy. And at this point, Allison, I'm like, someone needs to die. Like, we're getting, we're kind of like a half an hour in. Like, we have to have somebody murdered.
Well, Annie.
Oh, yeah, no. But it wasn't enough. Because she wasn't part of it. She
Not
wasn't
the camp
there
yet.
Yeah. I need somebody that
in
is
the
there
camp
to get murdered. I need the mayhem to begin.
Yes.
So,
time for
you're
mayhem.
Right. Sorry, Annie. Marcy and Brenda, so everyone's going over to the mess hall, which is like, where the kitchen is, there's sort of like an area for like the counselors to hang out, you know, sort of like the main cabin that has like the kitchen, I guess. So I'm going to call it the mess hall. Is that what it's called? I don't know. I'm going to call it that. So they're walking over to the mess hall and they're sort of planning dinner, like being like, okay, so we have this. I think we have this. And then a cop, Officer Dorf, drives up on his motorcycle. At that exact moment, Allison, Ned dances by, and he has sort of made his, like, denim short shorts and his underwear into sort of, like, a little diaper. And he's wearing a Native American headdress, and he's doing, like, an ululation where, like, you put your hand to your... I'm like, Ned must die.
Die.
At this point, I'm on the killer's side as long as the killer kills Ned.
As long as Ned dies, then I'm
this
good.
This is all worth it.
This is all worth it.
Then I'm totally fine with this. Luckily, even Ned has the decency to be fucking embarrassed when he sees there's a cop. He's like, oh, I'm really sorry. And the cops are like, what are you kids doing here? You smoking grass? Hash? Columbia Gold? And everyone's like, can we help you? Why are you here? And Officer Dorf tells them he's looking for Ralph, the town crazy, because
Obviously.
He's sort of wandered off, you know? And again, I think we're supposed to think, is crazy Ralph? Is he the killer? Is he sort of in the woods lurking around?
I can see laying the groundwork for that.
And Brenda's like, should we be worried? Is Ralph dangerous? And Dorf tells him, when Ralph gets drunk, he gets his calling. He starts sharing his gospel, if you will. Just then, Dorf gets a call on his radio and is like, all right, I'm going to head out of there. Keep your noses clean and let me know if you see crazy Ralph. And he says, we ain't going to stand for any weirdness out here. And he just zooms off in the mess hall. Alice cleans out some pots to cook in, and she opens the pantry only to find crazy Ralph standing there ominously. And he sort of, like, leaps out at her, and she screams, and Ralph tells her,
I'm a messenger of God. You're doomed if you stay here. This place is cursed. Cursed. It's got a death curse.
God sent me. I gotta warn you. Go! Go! And Ned's like, wow, I think we just met Ralph. And as Ralph leaves, Alice, who's been joined by Ned and Marcy, they watch him bike away, and he tells him, in case we didn't get it, he like kind of like quietly calls back, like, "You're doomed. You're all doomed." Allison, at this point of the film, I got to ask, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, I'm out of there.
Yeah, like, 100%.
I'm out of there. There's like, 100%. I'm out of there because I don't want to work with Ned. Like, that's enough for me to be leaving the scene.
Couldn't agree more.
And like, then like Crazy Ralph's hanging out, telling us that we're like, he's like hiding in the cabinet, telling us we're all going to die because this place is cursed. Like, no.
Yeah.
I'm out.
I completely get it.
This is me leaving.
I think you're right because I'm looking at like, so normally we have like the first act and then like the second act tends to be the longest. Mm-hmm. And in my notes, the second act is the shortest act because pretty much once night falls, like you said, it's a one night, day. But once the sun goes down, it's just fucking on.
Wow. Like, okay.
There's barely any time for anyone to like, once we've begun, you got to get the fuck out of there, you know?
It.
So
yes.
I think this is a moment. He's giving you the warning, as we've seen in other horror movies, as is lampooned in The Cabin in the Woods. If you do not heed the warning of this, the Crazy Ralph, a prophet from God, you are taking your life into your hands.
Yes.
And nobody listens to them.
No. They never get their due. They never get the respect paid because always the people that are warned end up dead. So they can't be like, thanks, Ralph. You were right.
You're absolutely right. And Ralph probably will warn people in the future. I'm assuming there are quite a number of movies in this franchise.
Yes.
I can't imagine they're listening to that guy.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Everyone gets to work on preparing dinner, only for the lights to go out. And Brenda, Jack, and Bill, they go find the generator, and luckily they're able to turn it on. We're in business. We've got electricity again. Speaking of business, Jack and Marcy sneak away to the lake for some alone time.
Ooh.
And Ned, of course, watches them sort of forlornly. And it's like, Ned, you could have a girlfriend in any second. You just have to stop being yourself. Just fight it.
Whatever. Be anyone else.
To act, like just pick someone to act like whatever is going on in you, no one wants it.
Yeah,
and
it's
that's
like the Seinfeld,
be the problem.
The opposite, where George just starts doing the opposite of all of his intentions.
Behaviors. Yeah. Yes. I was like his weird compulsion.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Ned, it kind of, as he sort of meanders around, he spots someone entering one of the cabins and he calls to them. And when they don't reply, he follows them in. Never do this, obviously.
Never.
Even Marcy, who is, again, with Jack, friends with Ned, they came with Ned. Marcy's like, oh my God, Ned is acting like such a weird jerk, like worse though than normal. It's like, oh, he must be like trying to impress the other girls, but like in his way, which is just very alienating and off-putting. And Jack's like, yeah, Ned's going to do what Ned's going to do. Like, it's out of our hands. You know, like, we can't control that guy. And that sucks. It's like, I feel bad for people about to be murdered by a serial killer. But it's even worse, the idea that your friends are talking about you like, man, yeah, I don't know, man. He's just a weird jerk. There's nothing we can do about it, you know?
Yeah, he is a weird jerk.
Yeah. So the rain starts coming in. It's a full thunderstorm. And Marcy's like, you know, I have this recurring dream I've had maybe a half dozen times. I'm caught in a rainstorm and the raindrops turn to blood. Anyways, let's go have sex in that cabin. So, of course, they immediately go in. There's no one there, of course.
Sexy talk.
Yeah. And they're laying on the bottom bed of a set of bunk beds. And Jack finds a candle and you hear the rain. It's actually pretty romantic.
Yeah.
I feel like it's, like, very cute. The less romantic part, Allison, is the fact that Ned's murdered corpse is lying on the top of the bunk bed, throat slashed. So Ned, feature rap on Ned, died a virgin, understandable. Sure, I feel bad. He shouldn't have gone out this way, but he's out of here. Back at the mess hall, it's Alice, Brenda, and Bill. So they have a fire going, and Bill starts to play an acoustic guitar, a lot of acoustic guitar. It is a camp, you know.
Still unacceptable.
And Brenda, who's always thinking, leaps up and says, I have a great idea. Let's play strip Monopoly. And I'm like, I appreciate like the horny fun of like a strip game. Strip Monopoly sounds like a fucking nightmare. I hate Monopoly.
Monopoly?
What are your thoughts
like,
on it?
Also, like, how much time? I mean, I guess they have a lot of time to kill, but like,
yeah,
it's a long, boring game that even like sexy stripping is not going to make better. It's confused. Yeah. It's like boring and confusing, but also nothing happens.
Even when they're playing it and explaining it, I'm still confused about like when you like. I guess stripping is money, but then they still are playing with money. I wouldn't have been able to do it.
No.
But they bust out the board and they have some beers. They smoke a little weed, so they're having fun.
All right. Minus the Monopoly. That's a fun time.
So back at the cabin, Marcy's like, I have to pee. So she sneaks off. And I guess there's like essentially a bathroom cabin where like it has the restrooms and it has the showers. Yes. Mm-hmm. Versus like individual showers and bathrooms in the actual cabins. It's like, you know, sort of the, whatever you call that, the bathroom cabin. And she, I think it's like the first time we've had somebody acknowledge having to go to the bathroom in a horror movie in forever, a very long time.
It never happens, and it should always be addressed.
Exactly. Unfortunately, as soon as she sneaks away, we see a hand reach up from under the bed and grab Jack's forehead and sort of hold him to the mattress, and then an arrow stabs up through the mattress and through Jack's throat, killing him. Jack dead. Even worse, we see the killer, because we're in their POV, following Marcy into the restroom. And she's sort of doing a bit, doing like a little Catherine Hepburn. There's a lot of bits in the mirror, and she's washing her hand. And she hears somebody thumping around, but assumes because of all of his pranks that it's Ned trying to freak her out again. And I'm like, how many lives
also,
in a horror
Ned
movie?
Ned fucked with everybody because like you're assuming, it's like at first pass, you're like, it's probably just Ned doing something fucked
exactly. up. And it's like, how many lives in a horror movie could have been spared if nobody played pranks?
Thus lulling
your friends into a sense of complacency.
Yes, right. This is why you shouldn't do pranks.
Exactly.
Like, I don't like pranks at all. And then, like, they do, dull your senses to, like, be like, oh, I shouldn't be so worried about that. And it's like, you should be worried about everything all of the time.
If it's like, I walk in at the door and there's a bucket of confetti falls on me, great.
Fine.
Or, like, any kind of dumb thing like that. I bite into a cupcake, there's a pickle. If I am concerned that if someone is dead or injured in any way, I will never speak to you again, or and you like, will deserve it.
Yes, or you're like pretending you're going to push me off of something. Like just anything in that world of like true danger is on the table.
No. Yeah.
No. But I don't want a pickle and a cupcake either.
Well, that's true. So don't eat the cupcakes I just sent you. It makes me think there's like that YouTube video. There was from a while ago where it was like, a couple and the guy took a mannequin and threw it off their balcony and made his wife think it was one of their children. And I want to be clear, maybe she knew and it was staged or whatever, but her reaction is very distraught. And it's
obviously,
like, what is wrong with you? Like, what would, like, did you like,
get
ha,
a divorce.
I'm murdering your child in front of you.
LOL, absolutely. Get a divorce.
LOL, LMAO, absolutely not. So, of course, Marcy hears some noises, but thinks Ned's going to, like, pop out. So she whips open a shower curtain, and there's nobody there. And she says, huh, must have been my imagination. Allison, she turns around, and the killer buries an axe in her face.
These are, like, pretty brutal deaths. Like, it's not
They're all brutal. Yeah. They're very gory.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's Jack, Marcy, and Jack, Marcy, and Ned. They're out.
Gone.
So back at the mess hall, Brenda, Bill, and Alice are all in their undies already. And they're like, okay, all right.
Somebody was good or bad at Monopoly?
I can't.
Couldn't tell you.
Suddenly, Brenda realizes, which is like I would do. She's like, oh my God, I left the window open in my cabin. All my shit's getting rained on.
Oh, that is.
She doesn't even put her clothes on. She just throws on a rain jacket and puts her boots on. She's like, I'm going to go to bed afterwards, so I'll see you guys tonight. Unfortunately, now Bill and Alice are like, oh, well, if we don't see Brenda, it's because she went to sleep.
Yep.
And Bill and Alice are also kind of flirting. They, like, clean up the board. And they're kind of like, you know, oh, we'll have to play this again tomorrow night. You know, we'll have to finish the game. Meanwhile, at a diner in town, the waitress, a waitress named Sandy, is telling Steve, who has stopped in to eat, like, do not drive in the storm. Like, it's torrentially raining. I'm sure your counselors will be fine. Just stay in town. Because it's so rural and remote. Essentially, the roads could wash out.
Yeah, and then, like, you're fucked. Yeah. And this is, like, pre-cell phones, pre-everything. So, yeah.
Exactly. And Steve says, I absolutely will not do that. And so he puts on his big yellow raincoat and gets in his Jeep. And he puts the top up. And it's raining so hard that he could barely see. But he makes it back essentially to, like, the little road that goes down to camp. So, which is still kind of long, but, like, he's close to camp. And unfortunately, then his Jeep gets stuck in the mud. Brenda, meanwhile, she goes to the bathroom cabin. She's brushing her teeth. She's getting ready for bed. We, behind her, see a shower curtain move. Fortunately, she makes it out of the crapper alive. She makes it back to her cabin. And Steve is aided by a different cop, Sergeant Tierney, who comes upon him and gets him into the cruiser and says, I will give you a lift back to camp, and Steve will come and get the Jeep out in the morning. So Steve still headed back to camp.
Okay.
Unfortunately, with a cop. We see the killer is watching Brenda through the window of her cabin. So, you know, she's getting her book out. It's time to get in bed and enjoy a good 8 hours of being murdered. And the second Brenda lays down in her nightgown and opens her book, she hears a little boy's voice calling, help me.
No.
Allison, I got to ask, at this point in the movie, who will survive?
Who will survive?
And I'm happy to give you the names of the people who are still alive.
It's Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Brenda, for now.
Mm-hmm.
Marcy? No, Marcy's dead.
Alice.
Steve.
Both of the cops we've seen, Sergeant Tierney and Officer Dorf.
And Crazy Ralph.
And then, of course, the killer.
The killer, right. I believe the killer will survive because there's more of these movies, though I don't know how that could work. It could possibly be, you know, who knows. But I think the killer will survive. I think Steve will survive.
Okay.
But the cop he's with will die.
Okay.
Crazy Ralph will survive.
Great.
And I think Bill and Alice are both good. I think all the counselors will be dead by the end.
Okay, great.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Brenda, because she's a decent person, you know, puts out her raincoat and she tries to investigate with her flashlight because she's like, is there actually a child here? Because she keeps hearing this child's voice screaming, I'm over here, somebody help me, please. And the voice leads her to the archery range. And unfortunately, we see a hand turn on the floodlights, blinding Brenda, and we hear her scream. Back at the mess hall, Alice is in front of the fire. She started strumming the guitar. The door bursts in, but it's just Bill. He was checking on the generator.
Okay.
And it seems like everything looks okay. And Alice is like, I just heard a woman scream. I'm concerned it was Brenda. And also, the lights came on the archery range, but they're off now. So I don't know what the fuck's going on. We should go check it out. Luckily, they at least go together.
Okay.
So they go to check on Brenda's cabin first. And when they go to her cabin, unfortunately, they find a bloody axe tucked into Brenda's bed.
Oh, yes. That's in the trailer.
Terrified, they run to Jack and Marcy's cabin. They're not there. They run to Ned's cabin. They aren't there either. And no one is in the bathroom. Alice is like, we have to call the fucking cops. Like, I don't know what is going on. I know it's rainy. It might be hard for them to get out here. Everyone has disappeared. And there's a bloody axe in Brenda's bed. And Bill's like, yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. So when they go to Steve's office, which ostensibly is the only phone in the camp, it's locked. And to Alice's credit, she says, fuck it, and then just breaks the window in the office door to reach and unlock it.
Yes,
she's like, I'm not here to fuck around.
No, 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 no.
We're not going to ham and haw. Allison, the phone is dead, of course. Fortunately, there's a payphone. Unfortunately, the payphone is also dead. They run to Bill's car. It will not start. It is also dead. Brenda says, let's just hike out of here. Let's just hit the road and fucking walk, which is what the right answer is.
Yes. Yes.
Bill's just like, no. Leave. Yeah. Bill's like, it's still torrentially raining. It's 10 miles to the crossroad. Steve is coming back tonight. He can give us a lift. It's going to be fine. Unfortunately, we see Sergeant Tierney is driving Steve back, and the rain has stopped, so that's good. And he says,
it's not bad enough to have Friday the 13th. We've got to have a full moon, too. We have more accidents, more rapes, more robberies, more homicides, and more of everything when there's a full moon. It upsets people, makes them nuts.
Like, yes. A full moon does cause a lot of different things, statistically speaking. And Sergeant Tierney says, you know, I heard Crazy Ralph was out your way. His wife was worried sick about him. Crazy Ralph is married, Allison.
I mean,
who is, I would love to meet Mrs. Crazy Ralph. What's her story?
Yeah. There's a lid for every pot.
I understand some people don't believe in divorce, but I got to imagine.
Right. Has Crazy Ralph been Crazy Ralph the whole time? Is this kind of a slow devolution that he's been suffering through, and she's like, well, I married him. I'm sticking. Like,
right, yeah. Whereas Val's like, you're doomed. You're all doomed.
Or is she a believer?
You know, and I hope it's the latter. Me I too. Hope that she really is like, yeah, Crazy Ralph's never been wrong. And he certainly isn't wrong about this. So,
I mean, the only, I'm sure he's crazy, but, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. So right then, Sergeant Tierney gets a call saying there's been a terrible accident with multiple people trapped in a car. So we let Steve out to walk the rest of the way.
Oh.
Luckily, it stops raining. Unluckily, as he walks towards the camp, he's almost there. Steve is blinded by a flashlight, and he recognizes the person holding it, but we don't see who it is. And he says, oh, hi, what are you doing out here in this mess? Allison, the killer just stabs Steve, killing him.
Okay.
So Steve is dead.
Oh, I really want Steve to make it.
I don't know why. You would have liked him.
I know.
Even worse, over at camp, we see the killer has sabotaged the generator, so there's no power whatsoever. Of course, Bill and Alice don't know that, so Bill's like, okay, the generator probably just ran out of gas. I'll go refill it. You stay here, and of course, I'll be right back. A classic line, disgust and scream. Used in so many different
Never
horror
say,
movies.
I'll be right back.
Alice sort of dozes off while he goes and wakes up confused, but she's like, oh, right, Bill's just fixing the generator. Everything's fine. And she goes into the kitchen to turn on the gas stove manually with a lighter and starts heating water for instant coffee. Bill's taking an awful long time in the generator room. Eventually, she says, fuck it, and sets off to find Bill. Allison, you're not going to believe this. That motherfucker is dead.
Of course he is. Also, this killer is, moving around.
Yeah, grass is not growing under this killer's feet, for sure. And his corpse is sort of speared through with arrows against the door. So he's sort of suspended against the door.
Yeah.
Alice freaks out. She runs back to the mess hall and she's using a rope thrown over a rafter to tie the door closed and pushes a trunk in front of it.
Is she now the last one alive?
Alice is the last one alive. Aww. And but she's doing all the stuff you have to do. It's like, I'm barricading myself inside. I'm going to figure this out. And it would have worked too, unfortunately, if Brenda's corpse was not thrown through the window. So the killer has hurled Brenda's corpse.
What?
And, of course, Alice is like, oh, God, what am I going to do? And then the corpse comes flying in through the window. And she freaks out, and she runs outside just as a Jeep appears. And she's like, oh, my, thank God it's Steve. It's not Steve, Allison.
No, Steve dead.
It's a middle-aged woman who steps out and says, oh, hello, I'm Mrs. Voorhees, an old friend of the Christies. Alice, runs to her, assuming she's safe, sobbing, everyone's dead. Right. We got to get out of here. And Mrs. Voorhees no, I'm sure it's just a storm in this place. That's why you're upset. And she's like, no, Brenda's body is in there. And Mrs. Voorhees I'll go take a look for myself, okay? They go into the mess hall. Of course, Brenda's body is still there. And Mrs. Voorhees is so young and pretty. What monster could have done this? Steve never should have opened this place. And of course, she tells then the story of the boy who drowned. He drowned in 1957. It was the start of it all, she says. The counselors weren't paying any attention. They were making love while that young boy drowned, which is a very classy way to put that. I don't think this is not making love.
No, not whatever two teens were doing.
Yeah, his name was Jason. I was working here the day it happened. I was the cook here. Jason should have been watched. He wasn't a very good swimmer. Mrs. Voorhees says, we should go now, dear. But Alice is tipped off to the fact that this is not right. No. So Alice is like, you know, I actually think we should stay here for Steve now. Hearing you tell that story made me
think I'm not going to
get in your car. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Smart.
Unfortunately, Mrs. Voorhees starts to have like sort of a vision or hallucination, a flashback to Jason's death. And she sees him calling from the water and he's calling, Mommy, help me. Help me, Mommy. And in current day, Mrs. Voorhees says, I am, son. I am. She tells Alice, Jason was my son, and today was his birthday. I couldn't let them open this place again, not after what happened. And Alice is like, oh, so Steve's probably not coming back then.
Yeah.
And she turns on Alice, and she's like, you didn't pay any attention? Look what you did to him. And she lunges at Alice. But Alice manages to fend her off with a fireplace poker and then escape. Alice runs to the Jeep only to find Annie's corpse inside and Steve's body beside it. So I guess Mrs. Voorhees killed both of them, tossed them into the Jeep. And as Mrs. Voorhees tracks Alice down and she like runs through the camp, Mrs. Voorhees talks both in her own voice and in a Jason voice, like a little boy voice that tells her,
kill her, Mommy. Kill her. Don't let her get away, Mommy. Don't let her live.
And Mrs. Voorhees then will reply in her own voice,
I won't, Jason. I won't.
Yeah, it's not a good sign.
What? No. Also, like, this woman killed all these, like it's so physical.
It's
like,
so
running
physical.
Around, and, like, throwing a body.
Bill, yeah, lifting up a dead weight corpse, throwing it through
a
window.
Throw a body.
No, I don't think any one person could. Maybe The Rock, but he wouldn't, and we know that.
Right.
But fortunately, Allison, the camp has a shotgun. And Alice knows where it is. It's in the boathouse. Unfortunately, the bullets are stored separately. And I was like, this really is it's like, they really were being good gun owners. And it really fucked her over at this point.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Voorhees finds her and says, let's go, dear. It'll be easier for you than it was for Jason. And then she just starts slapping the shit out of Alice and like throwing her around the room. Like just manhandling it. But luckily, Alice is still like a young woman. You know, she has some strength and she's able to get free. And then we just see Mrs. Voorhees stalking her throughout the camp. And in her Jason voice saying, kill her, Mommy. She can't hide. So unable to like tell exactly what the best move is, Alice doubles back to the mess hall and shuts off all the lights and hides in the pantry to be like, I'm just going to wait this out. Unfortunately, Mrs. Voorhees starts busting down the pantry door with a machete. And Alice is able to
what?
Knock
Where'd
her
Where'd
she
get her machete?
Well, remember, Bill had the machete earlier. So I got to imagine he just dropped it. Or maybe it was
around.
In the mess hall. It was around, yeah. So she's busting with a machete, but Alice is able to knock her out with a frying pan and makes it down to the lake. And she's so exhausted, she sort of like collapses into a canoe. Unfortunately, Mrs. Voorhees attacks her once again. And this time they're brawling. They're literally like, she's choking Alice on the ground. Alice gets on top of her. She's able to escape. She grabs a machete off the ground and sort of like throws her arm at Mrs. Voorhees, completely decapitating her.
What?
So then, for reasons I don't fully understand other than just, like, it's cinematic, Alice drags the canoe into the lake and gets inside and sort of floats in the middle of the lake, falling asleep. Maybe she's like, is it safer here? I don't know what her thought process is. But finally, dawn comes, and it's a new hopeful day. And just, you know, as she wakes up at dawn, a police cruiser arrives, and it's Dorf and Tierney. And they spot Alice, and they're sort of waving to her. And she's sort of, you can tell she's mentally broken, but she's alive. And she sort of looks up at the sky, smiling, until the decomposing body of Jason Voorhees leaps out of the water and hooks his arm around her neck and drags Alice into the lake, ostensibly to her doom. Just kidding. Alice wakes up, screaming in a hospital bed. She has survived. She is our final girl.
Okay.
And the nurse gives her a sedative because of all the screaming. And Sergeant Tierney sits there and sort of talks to her and visits with her. And Alice is like, are they all dead? All of them? And Tierney says, they are. Yeah. And she says, is Jason dead too, the boy who attacked me? And Tierney said, we didn't find any boy. And Alice looks at him with this look of resignation and says, then he's still there. And as we pan out, we end on a beautiful shot of Crystal Lake. and the smooth, unbroken water thereof. The end. I said the end, Allison.
So, Jason isn't around?
You know, I think based on my very little research I've done, this was not intended to set up a franchise. So I do think it was written that Jason, he's there in a mournful, metaphorical sense. But he's not there in terms of a physical sense. However, in the franchise, if anyone's familiar with the films, he becomes quite literally there. So I think that we're supposed to be like, it's sad. It's sad that, like, that he's in the water and that he was killed in that way and it was horrible. But he was not literally attacking her in the canoe.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but that's what I took from it.
Well, just because I feel like when people talk about this movie, like, and when they talk about, like, killers, which I guess makes sense, like, because there are more movies following this with, they talk about, like, Jason Voorhees. Like,
yes.
A villain, a killer.
And then that's what he becomes for the rest of the franchise.
But he is not in this movie.
No,
he's not in this movie.
Which is the trick question from Scream, where it's like, who's the killer in Friday the 13th, the original Friday the 13th? It's Mrs. Voorhees. Jason doesn't kill anybody in the original Friday the 13th.
Right,
but then
right.
He becomes the slasher. He becomes, you know, sort of the...
So is he... We'll have to, like, do these movies, obviously, but, like, is he, like... I guess he exists, like, Freddy Krueger's just in your dreams.
But he is, like, Freddy Krueger, someone who died and then has
died
the ability
and then, like...
Yeah. So I think we're to think okay. Jason is someone who is supernatural, who did die and then was reanimated or exists in some sort of liminal space.
Yes.
That is not... He's not quite a zombie, but he's not a living serial killer in the way that,
yes.
you know, Michael... Well, that's hard, too, because, like, Michael Myers is ostensibly...
I mix
just
up
a serial
Freddy,
killer.
Michael, and Jason all the time.
Yeah, Freddy's dream. So Freddy's purely supernatural.
And he's got the hat.
He's got the hat and the sweater. And then Jason, I think, becomes increasingly supernatural.
The mask?
Yes, the mask, I believe, is introduced in the third one. I don't even think it's in the second one.
Or, like, it's confusing. I'll say that. It's confusing.
But, I mean, this is...
But this movie on its own, separate from all of that information, great.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yeah. I agree. I really like
a
the mom
jaunt.
As killer. I think that's super fun.
Yeah. Love mom as killer. Love that we're like, boom, boom, boom. It's like one after another.
Yeah.
And I like that Ned went early.
Yeah. Friday the 13th, part 3, that's when he finally gets the mask. So it's a little bit, it takes him a little while to find it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are some fatal mistakes you think that someone may have made in this movie?
Fatal mistakes.
Being a camp counselor, for starters. But, like, once you find out all that history and that, like, somebody killed two people and was never identified, I'm just not going to that area.
Couldn't agree more.
Ever.
Could not agree
for
more.
For anything. And I'm especially not going to go be a counselor when the two people were counselors.
I feel like we, in real life, understand that there is... certain limitations to what you could expect people to get over. You know what I
yes.
mean? With regards to when horrific things happening.
Yes.
And the that does not exist in the movies themselves.
Yes,
like I feel like
absolutely.
The movie is like, yeah, of course someone got murdered. I expect you to
it's like,
come
yeah,
be a camp
but I'm
counselor.
Still gonna take the job. It's like, what? No.
Yeah.
But then like once things get going, everybody kind of did a good job trying to stay alive.
Yeah, Alice is, you know, one of my, I mean, truly hats off. Like, she is
yes,
she is
yes.
a final girl who is giving it her all. She is
yeah.
strategizing.
And
she
smart,
is,
yeah.
Yeah, she's not, you know, granted, she was always committed to leaving. Should she have allowed Bill to talk her out of it? No, she should have been like, we're leaving. But I understand, it's like, there's one other person here. I want them
right.
to do whatever we're doing, I'll do it with them. Because it's just
yeah.
safer. There's a reason she's alive is that she absolutely, she was smart about it. She
yeah.
was committed to
she
it.
She did a great job.
I think that to me is it. It was like, don't take this job. And if you're Steve Christie, don't reopen the camp. Like, I
yeah,
think, you know, we're,
like,
he's connected to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Find another space
yes.
that isn't, even if it's just like nearby and almost the same, like, fine. Like,
yeah.
I just think that like, it's just too much.
Yeah, exactly. And then finally, where would you place Friday the 13th on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I think it's like a solid 6.
Okay.
I think it's like those deaths are really gory. I also think like killer POV is a real like scary technique. Like that's always like when you're like in the like you're looking at other people. I just always think that that's really spooky.
Yeah.
And like again, it's not supernatural. It's real stuff. So could happen. And therefore scary. Maybe 7. Actually, I'm going to bump it up to a 7.
Great. I'm going to give it a 4.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, but I think we've talked about this before, but it's like the silliness, like the net of it all, you know, sort of the crazy Ralph of it all. Sort of are make it enjoyable, but also to me definitely are not scary.
Yeah. And I get that.
You know, and that could be like, listen, you know, this is such a part of pop culture. You know, maybe I'm judging it with, you know what I mean, a little bit of a world-weary eye in a way that I wouldn't if this had just come out or I had seen this when I was 13.
Yes.
But I really enjoyed it. But this, to me, I think because it is such a revisited film and the cliches are so known, it's not as scary.
Yeah.
It was definitely awesome. I love it so much. It was really, really great. I'm love glad Mrs. Voorhees. Yes.
Like, I'm glad, like, I'm like, oh, like, the axe and the bet, like, these, I'm like, these are all things that, like, I have seen pop up, and I'm glad that now I have the source.
Yeah.
Without having to watch it.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed it, and we'll, if you have any suggestions for summer camp month, please send them our way. There seem to be plenty of options. And
for themes, like, you know, this theme got suggested. So if you know there's a genre or a subgenre rather, or a fun theme that we could probably hit 4 movies, send them our way.
Please. Ooh, sorry. Until we talk to you next time.
Yes.
I'm going to take a nap.
Until next time.
I'm absolutely going to take a nap. And but please, as we both dream.
We ask that you.
Do us a favor. Stay on guard. Hold vigil. And please.
Keep it spooky.
Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.